This is Penny Radio. Thank you for tuning in. I'm James Whittington, and I'm here to help you master your money. Whether you're a complete beginner or have been around the block once or twice, now is the time to start your journey and take control of your finances. And I'll be with you every step of the way. Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of Penny Radio. I'm here to help you become a master of your own financial future. And I have to do it via podcast because my face broke YouTube and now I'm banned. Anyway, remember to send in your questions and messages to pennyradio.co.uk and please leave a review on whatever platform you listen to help me understand what you do or don't like about this podcast so far and encourage anyone who may benefit to listen. I want this podcast to be a tool to help everyone of every level make sense of money so that you can all ultimately achieve financial health and well-being. This episode will be carrying along on our journey as we look to lay the foundations for our financial framework by making sure we have a basic understanding of key money ideas. Because thinking about having to deal with your finances can be scary and honestly quite boring, but by the end of this fundamental finance series, I hope that you'll have the tools and inclination to face your finances. And the sooner you face your finances, the easier it will be going forwards. You'll get out of the habit of putting it off and into the habit of getting it done. You'll also pick up useful tips and knowledge that will hopefully help you for the rest of your life, no matter what you face in the future. Remember, like I said in the last couple of episodes, you might find it helpful for this episode and the next few to have a copy of the Jargon Buster to hand, just until you get the hang of all the stuff that we're talking about. You can find a copy at pennyradio.co.uk/resources. So what are we going to be talking about this episode? Well, this episode is all going to be about bank accounts, and when I say bank accounts, I'm going to include building society accounts because they're basically the same thing. And we're going to look at what is a bank account to start off with, why do I need one, what types are there out there, and then we're going to be moving on to something slightly different. We're going to look at what debit and credit are. And these are two confusing terms at times, but let's clear it up in this episode today. Now, I'm sure that almost all of you have a bank account out there. Maybe it's because your mum took you into Nationwide when you were 7 to set up a savings account, because your nan sent you a cheque for your birthday instead of the Woolworths voucher you asked for, so you could buy Buzz Lightyear, which you really wanted, because of the previous year's debacle where you spent the whole £10 voucher on chocolate, ate most of it that same day and threw up. I think my brother has never liked chocolate since. Or maybe like me, you were suckered in by Midland Bank, now known as HSBC, when you were at school by a free pencil case or whatever it was, and for some reason you've stayed with them for the next 20 years, despite the often rage-inducing problems they always seem to create for you. However you got one, having a bank account is probably the most important step to mastering your money. If you don't have one, or think that finally facing your finances is a good point to start afresh, you can find reviews of the best bank accounts to join or switch to, and all the joining rewards on websites like moneysavingexpert.com. There are some people that struggle to open bank accounts if they're new to the UK or don't have a permanent address, for example. And this can be really detrimental and very bad for their financial health. For example, it can make receiving wages or getting somewhere to live so hard. Traditionally, it's been really hard for these people to get bank accounts with the big high street names. However, if you are one of these people that they like to call unbanked, which isn't exactly the nicest term in my view, but anyway, if you are one of these people, it's definitely worth checking out the smaller challenger banks. They're a lot more accessible. Some examples are Monzo or Starling, and there are lots of others out there as well. Just like most of you already have a bank account, I'm sure you also know what a bank account actually is, but I want to cover it quickly as it can help understand what more complicated accounts are. It is basically a piggy bank that a company with a banking license looks after for you. The piggy bank is electronic, and with the account number and the other details that they give you, every branch in that company or that bank is able to see what's in there and let you access your money when you need it. You can put money into it by physically paying in cash or cheques at any of the branches, or electronically by transferring from another account. Also, other people and companies can pay money into your account for you as well, like when your company pays in your wages. And you can also take money out of it as well, either physically at an ATM or cash machine, or within a branch itself. Or you can take your money out of your bank account electronically. This is what happens when you transfer money from your account to another account, or if you authorise companies to take the money out. This is what happens when you pay for something with your card or set up a direct debit. Bank accounts are quite useful because it means you don't have to have all your cash at home in an actual piggy bank or under the mattress where it could get lost, stolen, or even eaten by rats. That may sound silly, but Pablo Escobar, the infamous drug cartel boss, reportedly lost $2.1 billion in cash a year to rats eating it. Now that's an expensive rodent problem. So it's actually much safer to keep your cash in a bank account because in order to get their license, banks have to provide certain safeguards to protect your money and to make it as accessible to you as possible when you need to take your cash out. In fact, your cash in your UK bank account is actually protected by an organisation called the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. In case your bank actually goes bankrupt, you're protected up to £85,000 per person per banking group. So if you have a joint account with your partner, that's £170,000 between you. And that's £85,000 per person per banking group. So if you have accounts with multiple banking groups, you get multiple £85,000 worth of protection. But if all your cash is within the same banking group, even if it's different banks, then it won't all be protected if it's over £85,000. So what I mean by that is, let's say you have £50,000 in an account with Clydesdale Bank and £40,000 in Yorkshire Bank, then only £85,000 would be protected if they went bust. But £5,000 will not be protected and you could lose it. And that's because Clydesdale and Yorkshire Banks are both part of the same banking group, CYBG. But what you could do is transfer that £5,000 that's not protected into a different banking group, like Barclays, for example, and then it would be protected. So your £85,000 in the CYBG banking group would be protected, and your £5,000 in the Barclays banking group would be protected. There are some occasions when you actually get more than £85,000 protection per banking group. These are called lifetime events, and they can include if you've just got a big divorce settlement, or you've sold your house and got a load of money sitting in your bank account, or maybe someone really close to you has unfortunately just died and they've left you a big inheritance. In these cases, you actually get up to £1 million worth of protection that lasts for 6 months. So I think something that you'd really benefit from after listening to this episode is going away and checking how much you have in cash across all of your bank accounts. And you can Google who owns your banks to see if they fall within the same banking group or not. And if you are lucky enough to have more than the protected allowance limits in a banking group, you should definitely consider setting up a new account with a new banking group and transferring some of your cash over to that other bank. This will also help spread the risk of a bank going bust. So what's in it for the bank? What do they get out of this arrangement? Well, traditionally, they used to pay you a small amount of interest on the cash that you held in a bank account with them. Sounds generous, right? Well, today, because the Bank of England base rate is so low at only 0.75%, and because high street banks base their interest rate off this rate, a lot of them pay nothing for you to hold money with them in a standard current account. And if a bank does pay something, it'll be so small and less than inflation, so technically you'll be losing money every year. Now, don't worry if that didn't really make sense, because we're going to be covering inflation and interest in a lot more detail later on in the series. But anyway, even if it looks like your cash is still in your bank account every time you log on and check your balance, or put your card in the ATM machine and check your balance, the bank actually uses your cash for its own purposes. What I mean by this is that it will use your money to lend to other people, and maybe even back to you, for things like buying a house or starting a business, and it charges you interest on those loans. So it will make money from your money. A bit cheeky, right? Well, hang on. What if they are lending my money out? How could I get it back? Well, you can ask for it back at any time, and they will pay it to you for any reason whatsoever. So it's not a problem because they take the money out of their cash reserves and give it back to you. However, if everyone decides that they want to get their money back at the same time, then they won't have enough, as a lot of it will be tied up in loans to people. This is called a bank run, and can force a bank to shut down unless shareholders or the government step in to help pay people back. This is what the FSCS, or the Financial Services Compensation Scheme, £85,000 allowance protects you from. Unfortunately, it happened to Northern Rock in the last financial crisis, and they ultimately went bust. So yeah, they make more money than they pay you for using your money. But then you don't need to pay for most standard accounts, and you get the benefit of having your money protected and getting access to it whenever you need it. There are also other benefits to having a bank account as well. These include having somewhere for a company to pay your wages into. Now, most companies these days want to pay you directly into a bank account because this helps them keep accurate records for tax reporting, accounting, and helps them automate it and even outsource their payroll systems. And the same benefits actually apply to you too. Because having a bank account allows you to see statements, historical transactions, information, and your current balance. It also helps you keep track of how much you've spent, when, and on what, as well as how much money you have and what you have coming out soon. This can help you identify any shortfalls coming up. A current account will also usually give you access to an overdraft. In fact, your bank will probably encourage you to get one. An overdraft is a form of short-term debt that you'll pay interest on if you use it. But it does help you if you have differences in timing for the money that comes into your account and the money that goes out of it. For example, if you pay your bills on the 27th of the month and you only get paid on the 28th of the month, then it will cover this shortfall. So it can be a useful tool, but it does come at a cost. And you wouldn't be able to get access to this if you didn't have a bank account and just kept your money at home under the mattress. There is also the benefit of having one central location to pay out all the things that you need to, and with direct debits and standing orders, you can actually automate this, so it pays your bills for you to companies on a regular basis. This means that you won't forget to pay them and makes things a lot simpler. Also, some companies like energy providers actually give you a discount if you pay by direct debit. So direct debits and standing orders. Sounds like jargon, right? Well, let's bust it right now then. A direct debit is where you have an agreement with a company for them to debit your account, usually on a regular basis, like every month or once a year or whatever, for an amount of money for something that they have provided to you, like a service. So things like to pay your monthly phone bill or electricity bill, or even membership for a club or a subscription to a magazine. The company tells the bank how much it's going to collect each time, so this means that the amount can actually be different every time. So if your normal phone contract is for like £15 a month, but this month you went over your data limit and spent an extra £5, but the phone company could ask your bank for £20 rather than taking the £15 and asking you to send the extra £5. This makes it easier for everyone and means you are less likely to ruin your credit score by forgetting to pay your bills on time. Now, this is slightly different to a standing order. A standing order is an instruction that you give to your bank to make a regular payment to a company or someone else for a fixed amount each month. The amount can't change, so the other person can't ask your bank for more. They have to go and ask you for it. For example, if you have to pay your rent each month, you can set up a standing order to automatically send the same amount each month to your landlord, so you can forget about worrying to remember it each month. Just remember to cancel it if you move house, though, because you don't want to be paying two lots of rent each month. Another benefit of having a bank account is that it means that you're usually entitled to get a debit card. This lets you buy stuff without having to carry all your cash around with you at the same time. So you can buy that avocado on toast flavored craft beer without needing a wallet full of cash that just wouldn't fit into your skinny jeans. So overall, bank accounts are a really good thing because they make it easier and safer for you to receive, use, and store your money. They can help you with other things too, like helping you to borrow money and in setting up other stuff you need, like contracts with utility companies and phone companies, and even when you're looking to rent a house or flat or get a job. Now, there are two main types of bank account, but as is always the case with personal finance, it's not quite as simple as this. Now, I've mentioned both of them already, but the first main type of account, and most common one, is a current account. This is what you will use for everyday spending and to receive wages and stuff. They usually pay low or absolutely no interest these days, but they are free to use in most cases. And if they do pay decent interest, it may only be on some of your money and not all of it, or you may even have to pay for the account itself. Now, pretty much every single bank and building society out there want you to get a current account with them because they know that getting a current account is the first financial step for a person. They also know that most people are going to need other banking services later on in their lives, like if they're going to need a mortgage or they want to get a savings or investment product. And they think that if you have a current account with them, you're going to go to them first for the other services, and the other services are what makes them the most money. And they are right in the majority of cases. This is where you see bank accounts that offer cashback deals or vouchers to get you in or to switch over from your current account. And it's actually really easy to switch over from your current account to your new current account because all banks these days have to provide CASS. CASS is the Current Account Switching Service Guarantee, and it means that your newly chosen bank closes down your old account for you, and it moves all your regular payments in and out over to your new account, and it will also transfer any remaining cash from your old account into your new account, so you don't have to do it yourself. You can, of course, just open a new account and decide not to use the switching service, and keep your old account open at the same time if you want to. Anyway, once you're through the door, your new bank may then encourage you to sign up to a premium current account for like £10 or even more a month. This usually provides you with some sort of limited form of home or travel insurance. It could also give you access to higher interest savings accounts or cheaper and bigger overdrafts. There's normally some sort of dedicated helpline as well. However, for most people, the costs usually outweigh the benefits on these types of accounts, and things like the insurance cover will be quite basic and may not cover everything you need or want it to. Now, having worked in insurance for a long time, I'd always recommend reading the terms and conditions of any insurance cover that these types of accounts offer to you, and whether it's actually suitable for you, whether you really need it or not. If you do need it, you should also compare the cost to what you could get in the insurance market itself, because it always usually makes sense to buy insurance from an actual insurance company if you really do need it. So for almost everyone out there, I'd say that a standard free current account will do everything you need it to. The second main type of account that banks and building societies offer is called a savings account. Now, these are designed to put cash in for the longer term without having the usual everyday spending coming out of it. Therefore, you probably won't get a debit card, you don't normally get an overdraft, or you're not normally able to set up direct debits either. But they do pay a higher interest than their current account, and they encourage you not to withdraw your cash by limiting the number of times you can make a withdrawal out each year, or by reducing the interest rate if you do go over a certain number of withdrawals. They also often encourage you to make regular monthly savings into the account and to keep a lot of money in there, allowing you to unlock higher interest rates. However, these higher interest rates are normally only available up to a certain amount of money and not on all of your balance. If you hold a savings account with the same bank that you have a current account with, you can often link these, meaning that one can automatically top up the other. So, say for example you run out of cash in your current account, you can automatically make it so that money comes in from your savings account and means that you don't go into overdraft. There are loads of different types of savings accounts out there that offer different features for different needs, but usually the rule of thumb is that the more access that you have to your cash, or the more features that your savings account has, the lower the interest rate, and you may as well stick to a current account. Some examples of savings accounts include an easy access account. These are basically current accounts because they usually come with debit cards and they have a similar functionality. Therefore, they always pay the lowest interest rates of all savings accounts. Some may limit you to a certain number of withdrawals, and some are only accessible online. The interest rates are normally variable as well, meaning that the bank can change them by providing you with notice. This means that the interest rate may go down for the account that you've just signed up to. Now, at the other end of the scale, you have fixed rate accounts. These keep your money for whatever the terms and conditions of the account say. This can be for 3, 6, 12 months, or even 5 years in some cases. The interest rate normally stays the same as well throughout this whole period. And normally, the longer you keep your money locked up for, the higher the interest rate is. This is to encourage you to keep it locked up there for a long time so they can carry on using your money and making money themselves out of it. It's also to compensate you for the increased risk that you have for not being able to access your money for so long. Now, you may be able to get your money back sooner if you do need it, but you often have to pay a penalty or you get a lower interest rate as a result. These type of savings accounts are kind of like a different type of investment called bonds, which we'll be discussing another time anyway, so don't worry about that now. Now, the savings account that you've most likely heard of is called a regular savings account. Now, this requires you to save between a minimum and a maximum amount per month. And the advertised interest rate always sounds great, way better than the base rate and anything else you can get anywhere else. But you are limited to only making a small payment each month. This means that the actual interest that you earn will be quite small. Let's say you open a regular savings account that pays 8% interest per year, but you're limited to paying in £100 per month and you can only have it open for a year. Then only the first monthly payment in January is going to benefit from the full year's interest rate of 8%, and then you're going to get £8 on that first monthly payment. The final payment that you make into it in December will only earn you 8% divided by 12 for the number of months in the year, as it will have only been invested from December to January the following year, or 1 month. And this is only going to be 0.67% or 67p. So when you add it all up, it means that over the whole year, for each individual month's investment from January to December, you will have earned about 53 quid interest and have invested £1,200 into your account. So it's actually only 4.4% interest of your total investment by the end of the year, not the 8% that it looks like on the advert. So if you are thinking about opening one of these accounts, make sure you work out how much interest you would really earn over the year, not just look at the advertised rate. Don't worry, because I'll provide a link to a calculator for these types of accounts on the resources page at pennyradio.co.uk that will help you see what you will actually earn if you open one of these accounts. Now, I know I've rushed over these calculations and I'm sorry it's probably too fast to follow. Don't worry, I just wanted to use this as an example of how this account works. We'll cover interest rates in more detail and much slower in future episodes. The general rule though is that savings accounts will offer higher interest rates than current accounts. Not hard, as they mainly only offer 0%, but this will come at the cost of your money being locked up and having less features than the current account does. And if you want more features or access to your money, you'll get a lower interest rate. So given how low interest rates are and how low they have been for the last 10 years, you may think, well, what's the point of putting money into one of these accounts? Well, as we start to build our financial framework, we're going to be discussing the importance of holding cash for both short-term needs and emergency reasons as well. And these accounts can be quite useful for these aims. If you're thinking of opening any bank accounts, you should always read the terms and conditions of the account you're interested in, so you can understand the rules and to make sure you're comparing like for like, so that you can pick one that actually meets your needs. Because there's no point comparing interest rates in an easy access account to a fixed rate savings account and go with a fixed rate account because it offers a higher interest rate, when really what you may need is an account that you can easily access your money from. So if you do need a savings account, make sure you pick one that is right for your needs. You've probably heard the words debit and credit used before, and it can be really confusing as to what they actually mean. So let's bust that jargon and run through it now. If you have money in your bank account, it's called being in credit. Now the opposite is where you've spent more than you have in your account, then you're going to be in overdraft and you'll be in debt to the bank. This difference is quite easy to understand, but it does get a little more confusing. The word debit is used when money is taken out of your account, and the word credit can be used to describe money being added into your account. So money can be debited from your account and you can still be in credit. Or in other words, money has come out of your account, which has been a debit when you bought a new pair of shoes or whatever, but you still have money left in your account to buy dinner tonight, so you're in credit. Or money could be credited to your account, but you could still be in debt. What I mean by this is that you could have just received your wages into your account from your company, that's the credit, but you've spent too much last month and they're still in overdraft or debt. Okay, now when people open current accounts and some savings accounts, the bank sends them a debit card so they can pay for stuff in shops and online without having to use cash. I'm sure most of you actually have one of these and have used it for this. Anyone can get one from the age of 16. It's even possible with your parents' permission to get one from as young as 11 as well. They're called debit cards because when you buy something with them, the bank debits, or takes out, the cost of the thing from your account. So what's a credit account then? Well, confusingly, what it isn't is when your bank account is in credit. Instead, it is an account offered to you by a bank or a shop or some sort of other organisation. They provide you with credit, which is another way of saying a loan, that you can access to buy things on credit. If a bank offers you credit, you can use it to buy almost anything, and even take out cash as well. If a shop offers you credit, it is usually for that specific shop only, and is encouraging you to buy stuff from them that you may not want or have the money for if they hadn't offered you a loan. So, yes, the word credit does mean three completely different things. Helpful, right? So just as a reminder, a credit is some money you get paid into your normal bank account. Being in credit is when you have some money in your account and are not in debt. When you buy stuff on credit, you are taking out a loan and going into debt. So there is getting a credit, being in credit, and buying stuff on credit. When a bank offers you a credit card, it is linked to a credit account, so it's letting you use the card to buy stuff with without having to take out cash to pay for it. And when a shop offers you a card, or a credit card, it is usually called a store card, but it's basically the same thing. Now there are hundreds of credit accounts and credit cards out there, and they all offer different things, and some people may be able to access some and others may not be able to access other ones. But basically a bank will decide how much it trusts you to pay them back. If it thinks you are very trustworthy, it will offer you a higher credit limit or a bigger loan, and at a lower interest rate or cost. If it doesn't trust you as much, or you've had problems with debt in the past, or if you already have a lot of loans, it will offer you a smaller amount and at a higher interest rate or cost, because it thinks you're a bigger risk of not paying them back. It may not even offer you anything. It will use your score from a credit reference agency like Experian to work out how risky you are to lend to. The credit reference agency looks at your financial health and your history to calculate a score. You can view your credit score for free at the UK's three main agencies, which are Equifax, Experian and TransUnion, and you should do this on a regular basis. You should also check your records for errors, as this can badly affect your credit score and therefore your ability to borrow money. I recommend you pick a credit agency and check your score after this podcast. I'm going to put the links in the show notes so you can pick one and then work your way around their website and think what this would tell a bank about you. Would you lend to you? How much? How much would you charge yourself for that? Now, we'll be covering debt, borrowing, and how to boost your credit score in a lot more detail later on in Fundamental Finance, so don't worry about it now. And I'll be looking at credit cards specifically in a future series. It is worth noting for now, though, a few features of credit accounts and cards. Different banks can offer different reward schemes like points or air miles that you earn when you buy things with the cards, and these can later get swapped for flights or other things. Some even offer cashbacks, or may even offer early access to concert tickets or exclusive events or some sort of travel or home insurance. Now in my view, these are all gimmicks to try and get you to spend money you don't have on things you may not need. But if you are going to use a credit card anyway, and you find the card that suits your needs, and your card happens to have a reward scheme, then that is a bonus. but it shouldn't be the main reason that you get a credit card in the first place, or pick a certain credit card compared to others that better suit your needs. So there are some times that credit cards are useful for certain situations, like if you're travelling abroad, because there are some that don't charge if you buy something in a different currency. However, beware, because some of the cards that offer the best deals actually charge you a monthly fee, so you need to work out if you get value for money or not. In other words, are the rewards worth the cost? Generally, though, the way that credit cards work is that you can use them to buy anything from food to holidays, and then on a monthly basis, the bank will send you a statement with how much you've spent that month and any money that you owe from previous months, and they'll give you at least 20 days to pay at least a minimum amount back to them, all the way up to paying it all off. If you pay it all off on time, they won't charge you any interest. However, if you only pay the minimum amount or anything less than everything that you owe, then you will pay interest. And if you don't pay off at least the minimum amount, you will usually get an extra charge and may even be stopped from using your card altogether. The less you pay off, the more interest you're going to have to pay back. And this can build up really quickly over a few months because interest rates are so high, and you're going to end up owing interest on the interest too, because that unpaid interest is added to what you will owe. Now, you can actually use a credit card to take cash out if you want. However, if you do that, you must be warned that they usually charge you interest from day one, even if you end up paying it all off at the end of the month. And they'll probably charge you a higher interest rate as well, and a fee to take out cash, so it's usually not a good idea. A lot of credit card companies also include using your card for gambling or buying cryptocurrencies, or even getting foreign currency from a foreign exchange bureau for your holiday as the same as taking out cash, so avoid using it for these things as well. Now, you've probably seen deals for new customers from credit card companies that say 0% interest on balance transfers. But this is basically them allowing you to transfer your old credit card debt to your new credit card for free. But if you don't see this, they often charge you 3% or more on whatever you transfer over. As part of a deal for opening up a new credit card, companies may also offer 0% on all new purchases for a period of time, without having to pay anything back, sometimes for 1 or even 2 years. This sounds great, free stuff. Well, it's not free, is it? You're borrowing money from them. And if you don't pay everything back by the time that offer period runs out, you'll owe interest on everything you haven't paid back, so you could end up owing a lot more interest than if you had just been paying it back each month. Just to remind you, the best thing to do is to pay everything you owe back each month, and then you won't owe any interest, and this will also help improve your credit score, or at least make sure it doesn't get any worse. You can make sure you do this by automating it. Set up a direct debit with the credit card company so the full amount is paid off from your current account each month. Just make sure you have enough in your current account on the date that the credit card statement says it will be taking the money from you. And be careful, as for some reason this date can change every month. Now, I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but I think credit card companies do this to catch people out and get more money in interest charges and fees. Now, just like with any debt, the card company can come after you for the money that you owe them and even take you to court. And you could be at risk of losing your assets and potentially face bankruptcy, so you shouldn't ever borrow more than you can afford to. By now, you're probably asking yourself, well, are credit cards really worth it? And I'd say that for most people, the answer is definitely no. You may have just been sent a credit card by your current account provider and started using it even though you didn't really need to or really know what it was. And your bank may even increase the limit each year to encourage you to spend more. Well, if this is the case, you can get in touch with your bank and cancel your credit account, or lower the balance that is available for you to borrow if you don't need it. Or people may have been roped in by somewhat misleading and irresponsible marketing campaigns. Now, my view is that this is what shops do with their store cards. So be really careful if someone tries to get you to sign up for one in a shop. There are some benefits to using credit cards. Like, they can be useful in managing cash flow if, say, you're self-employed and you don't get a regular monthly income. Say, for example, you need to pay for something big like a new roof when yours has decided now is the perfect time to suddenly spring a leak and your emergency fund doesn't quite cover it, and you know that the money for that contract isn't coming in for another 3 months. They can also be useful for reserving things like hire cars, even if you don't end up using the card to pay for it in the end. In my view, one of the best benefits of credit cards is that you get some form of protection on goods and services that you buy that cost anywhere between £100 and £30,000. Say, for example, whatever you buy isn't delivered, or it turns up broken, or it's not up to a reasonable level of quality, then the credit card company has to pay you back the money that you spent on it. This is covered under Section 75 of the Consumer Credit Act and can be really useful for when booking things like flights or tickets that cost over £100 per person. I'm going to put a useful link in the show notes to the Money Saving Expert website on this, which will explain what you are and aren't covered for and how to go about claiming for it. If you decide that you do need a credit card, as with all financial products, you should always read the terms and conditions and make sure that you pick one that is right for you, one that's actually going to meet your needs. So there you have it, everything you need to know to understand bank accounts and the difference between debit and credit. Now there are a couple of things that I suggested during the episode that I think you should go away and do after this episode, and it's entirely up to you, but I'll just go over them again now. Firstly, it's always a good idea to check how much you have in all of your bank accounts and what this adds up to for each banking group, not individual bank, remember that. You'll need to do a bit of research on what banking groups your bank falls into, and then work out if you need to transfer any money into a new banking group to make sure you're not going over the limits of what's covered by the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. And secondly, this is something I recommend that you do on a regular basis. Go away and check out your credit score on one of Experian, Equifax, or TransUnion. Have a play around on their website and see what tips and guidance they give you about what your score means, how it's calculated, and how you can improve it. Also, check there are no errors, but if there are, make sure you report them straight away to the agency, as they can really impact your credit score. Well, thank you very much for listening to this episode. On the next episode, we're going to be looking at interest in a lot more detail. Now, it's entirely up to you, but I recommend having a calculator, a pen, and some paper to hand, as we're going to be going through some examples, and writing them out for yourself can really help you get your head around them. Don't worry, you don't need to be good with numbers to be able to understand the next episode, and hopefully afterwards you'll be able to work out the interest on your own money. In the meantime, if you'd like to find out more, you can visit pennyradio.co.uk, where you'll be able to find all the episodes, including today's one, and today's show notes as well, where I'll be putting all of the links and references that we've spoken about today. I'd also recommend visiting the resources page, where you'll be able to find the Jargon Buster and the link to the calculator for the savings accounts. And I'll be putting tools and other resources that I think will be really useful for you on this page as we go further along in the series. You'll also be able to find links to Penny Radio's Facebook and Twitter accounts, and find subscribe buttons to all of the top podcast platforms out there, so you'll never miss another episode in the future. And feel free to get in touch with me via the contact page or email if you have any questions, suggestions, or comments on the show or what you've heard so far. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard so far, I'd really appreciate it if you could leave a review on whatever podcast platform you use. That will allow me to reach and to help more people to manage their money. So until the next episode, goodbye and have a great week. Thank you for tuning in to Penny Radio. Join me next time where we'll be continuing the journey to help you master your money.